So you wanted to know what I thought, what my thoughts were about the Greek, the referendum and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that I would just, I guess, record those. If they were of any value, then maybe consider posting them, and so that's why that's what I'm doing. And so yeah, did you, so what do you don't know anything about it.
Pretty much
Okay.
nothing.
Well, I've been following the situation for a few months, or actually even years now. Well, the situation in Greece is one that's quite, I think it could be a what you consider to be a bellwether. A bellwether is just a sign, or a sign of the times, or a sign of things to come. And some people read, far too much into events, and they say things like they have these projections and all. Some of them are very negative and some of them are positive, but they're always just overblown or exaggerated when they just say that, because this happened, because Barack Obama was elected, it means that all black people will now become millionaires overnight, because obviously racial relations are now perfect in America, and we don't have any need for any programs now to support blacks anymore, because see, they can become a president, and so there's equality, and therefore everything is fine. And obviously that's not true. So, but in this case, I think you might run the risk of underestimating the influence that this might have on other countries and other situations, because it just shows a resounding. And of course, the referendum has only been count. The votes have only been counted to about 90%, so there's still a little bit left to be counted. But it's pretty clear now that because the margin of victory is more than the amount of votes that are left, that it can only get better for the side that voted no. And know what, and so there's been a lot of confusion in the last few days about what this is even an election about. And I'm sure that if there was more information out there, majority would even be higher. So what it was obviously the government that is in power now was elected at the beginning of the year, and it was elected on the basis that the prior administration had lost the confidence of the voters, and particularly of the other parties in the parliament, which basically voted out the last government. And the ruling party now, Syriza, is one that's far on the left, or at least it describes itself as such. And they want to, basically, one of their main points in the election was to negotiate. So they negotiate, they go to Brussels, and they try to get the debt of on their, on their country's debt down some. And I mean, it's, what do you know anything about debt and how debt affects countries?
Well, I know that national debt differs from what it is like to have a personal debt. What are the structure behind it? But
Well, there are similarities. It's national debt is, I mean, it's different, but it is also similar. So don't overemphasize the differences. It is different, of course. It is different than the debt of a business or a private citizen. So people who can make the comparison that, I have run a corporation and therefore I will be able to run a government. I mean, there are people who say that they do election campaigns, mostly they're on the right. They, of course, they're mistaken. Running a business is not like running government and vice versa. But of course, there are some similarities. So a national government's debt is very similar to the debt of a business or a person in that, it's debt. So it means that you have run up more costs than you have income. And income of a government are things like taxes, other forms of revenue, if you have tariffs or whatever for importing and other, there are different things. If you have tickets, tickets for speeding on the road and blah, blah, blah. That's all income for the government. So if all of the aggregate tickets and import quotas, and of course Greece doesn't have any import revenue because that actually is goes to the EU. They have an import union, a tariff union, and all that goes to Brussels. So they don't have any income there. But just whatever, the police income, the tax income, and other income from, say, college tuition and blah blah blah, say universities, that would then go to the government. And if it runs, if it has expenses, things like social security and your building roads and what else do governments do? They build stuff. They build infrastructure. They educate people. They pay for the civil servants' taxes and tax. The taxes have to be administered by someone, and they have to pay those people. So if all those
yeah.
payments are more than the money that they bring in, then they have a deficit. And I mean that's how it's similar. It's just like, you know, if you spend more than you earn, then you have a negative sign in your bank account. But that's where the similarities end. And governments are able to borrow at really a fraction of the cost of you and me. So, you know, whereas you and I, if we went to the bank, they would probably laugh us out of there. You know, haha, you're not going to get a loan here. You're a student. You're unemployed. You know, you're not going to. Sorry, governments most of the time are able to get loans at cheap rates of discount because they're not going anywhere. You know, a state's not going to go anywhere. They have quite a bit of collateral. They have, you know, a country. So they're...
Yes, unless it would declare bankruptcy, but no one would do that unless Iceland did.
Well, I don't think Iceland declared bankruptcy. It never got that far. It was actually bailed out by Russia, of all countries. Yes,
did
Russia... Well, it wasn't... Well, yeah, and to some extent, they didn't buy all of their debt, but they bought a significant fraction of it. And a lot of the toxic assets were, of course...
Okay, that's the other thing. Because it's like, buying off the debt is like a donation.
In a way, it is and it isn't. I mean, and it also depends on who is the person who's buying off the debt. So there are people who do this to individuals, and this happens. So there are what you call like loan sharks. And their name already says something about them. These are people who then go, they basically go to businesses and institutions. So one big example of this is hospital bills. Maybe you don't have that in Denmark, but in the United States, it's a really big phenomenon. So people go to the emergency room because they have a fever and they might, you know, be on the brink of dying because they have no health insurance. So they just go to the emergency room and they let themselves be treated there, and then they have a bill, of course, because, you know, they don't have insurance, so that the doctor then charges them for the services that they provide, because the United States' healthcare system is privately run. So you have to give the cost to someone, and the cost then go to the individual. The individual who's not insured is most likely not going to have a very good paying job, otherwise they would have insurance. They might not even have a job, so at some point the hospital says, you know what, this guy's not going to pay this debt. So, and that's when these companies come in, the loan sharks, and they call the hospital and say, oh, well, we hear you have some outstanding debt. I will buy that debt from you. And typically they will buy it at a discount. So the hospital says, you know, it's not worth it to me to keep calling this person and send letters. So I will take the bird in the bush rather than two in the... No, I'll take the bird in the hand rather than two in the bush. So they will just... sell off that debt. They sell the debt. They literally sell the debt. So they sell a claim on someone else's money to this person who then says, you know, give that to me and I'll take care of it. And they will sell that at a discount. That means that if you ran up $2,000 in health care bills, they're not going to sell that for $2,000 because the person who's buying it knows it's going to cost me something to, you know, to get the debt paid. So they will have a discount. So let's say they sell it for $1,000. Typically, it's less than that. It's probably, you know, $200 or something. So they sell it, as you say, on pennies to the dollar to this loan shark. And the loan shark then really has a very large freedom to then coerce you, basically, to pay. They'll call your house. They will threaten to, you know, cut off credit. And, you know, some of them may even impound property. They, you know, take away your car, or they... do this or that, they might get a court injunction and so on and so forth. So most of these people are really nasty. They're really nasty people who just spend their life basically trying to get people to give them money. You can just imagine how they are. So, I mean, and if you want to see the European Union and the IMF in that light, you can have that interpretation. I'm not saying that that's true, but, I mean, it's out there. And in a way, that's how, I mean, honestly, that's how they've behaved in the last situation. I mean, and I don't think that that's so much of a stretch. So, I mean, in a way, that's exactly what the IMF has done. Although they have been the least worse of those three, the Troika, so the European Central Bank and the EU. Basically, what those institutions have done is to buy up debt that the Greek government owes to various institutions. Some of them are state governments. But most of them were private banks, and most of them were European banks, French banks in the majority, and some were German banks as well. And they had sold the Greek government a lot of debt instruments. Some of them were done, were just legitimate things that they, that they just sold to, or they lent Greece money in order to, for them to buy weapons and things for their army. They have a very large army, the largest one in Europe per, per capita. Yeah, and that's a big problem. It's a big problem. Well, I mean, Greece was ruled by a fascist government for, about 40 years ago. It was ruled by a fascist dictatorship, and a lot of elements of that are still around today. So you have the Golden Dawn Party, if you've heard of them. They're, a neo-fascist group, but they're not new. They are part of this police and military bureaucracy, and a lot of members of the police and military are Golden Dawn supporters. They're incredibly nationalist, incredibly right-wing, sort of reactionary, really nasty people. And but yeah, they have a certain amount of power in Greece, and the military is always sort of there in the background, and that makes them in some sense similar to a state like Turkey, where the military is very independent and sometimes threatens the democratic traditions. But sometimes it's actually been a force of good. That's a really weird thing. Although in Greece it's mostly been a force for bad. It's a little bit of a different case. The situation with the debt then is that basically some, and actually even there, some of the loans were obviously predatory. So there was a case of Goldman Sachs selling various predatory instruments and derivatives and these sort of interest rate swaps and various things that people don't even know what this means, and they're so complex that people in government don't understand what it means. And somebody from the bank comes to you and says, if you sign this contract, I can save you money on this loan and blah, blah, blah. Of course, you're going to sign it because you think, why would they lie to me? And they do it. And this has happened so many times. Even in the United States, you've heard of the city of Detroit and Baltimore and how they are basically bankrupt. Part of the reason that that's the case is because that they were tricked into signing off a lot of these interest rate swaps and loans that are in a way that they have variable rates, and basically they turn out to be much worse than they thought, or they're much worse than they bargained with, because the worst case scenario always ends up happening, which in this case was the 2008 global financial meltdown, which caused a lot of things to happen that were not predicted. Banks collapsed and so on and so forth. And this really, really, really impacted Greece a lot. And the Greek economy was not strong enough to survive, basically. They would have... Greece basically defaulted. Nobody says this, but Greece basically defaulted in 2000... Well, actually, some people have argued this, like James Galbraith and Yanis Varoufakis, who is now the finance minister in Greece. They've argued that. But Greece basically defaulted in 2010 when it was decided that they would need a bailout. And since then... there have been what were called haircuts, so the debt was reduced somewhat, very little margin, but it was kept, and they had to keep paying the interest payments, but they didn't have the revenues to pay for it because of the fact that the Greek state is so corrupt and so poorly organized. It's still probably left over from the days of of European imperialism and the Ottomans, even the fact that the Ottomans were Greece was part of the Ottoman Empire, so it was sort of Eastern state that was the subject then later of European imperialism and then later American imperialism, and that kept them from really developing much. And I mean, that's just a fact. It's something you can read in history books. And the situation in Greece just was not good enough for them to get out of that, and they then were left to be wards of the European Union, basically, and the IMF and the European Central Bank. So the first bailout started in 2010, 2011, and they needed another one in, 2012, I think it began. And this one that expired last month, at the end of last month, so a few days ago, 5 days ago. And what ended up happening is that in these bailout programs, people hear the word bailout and, what does that even mean? They ended up paying not Greek people, they ended up paying the banks. So they have debt, they have problem with the revenue, they are in a depression right now, they have a horrible economy, the unemployment rate is higher than it was during the Great Depression. What's happening? And what is this bailout doing to alleviate that? Nothing. So the fact is that literally less than 10% of the money that was received from the bailout stayed in Greece. The rest of it, about 93%, went to the bankers in France and in Germany and other states, the United States and elsewhere. So they were basically paying
to repay the old loans.
Yeah. So you're not. So the fact is, the Greek economy is in distress. The Greek economy is falling apart. Part of the consequence of that is that they cannot pay their debts. But instead of fixing the problem, instead of alleviating the Greek crisis, you basically just continue paying the creditors while increasing the debt of Greece, because they have to pay all this back. You have to understand. And so you're basically paying off loans with other loans. And that's been a strategy, actually, that's been employed in Greece for about 200 years by French, British, and later American banks. And the Greeks, I guess, are just fed up with this at this point. They just are tired of it because it's not helping them. So a person that's your age or my age, who's going into their career right now, into their professional life, actually has more of a chance now of not finding a job than finding one. I mean, just imagine that. I mean, it's not that you have just as much of a chance of not finding one as you do of finding one, that it's like tossing a coin. It's even worse than that. So you actually have, there's about a 60% chance today of not finding a job. That means, so unemployment of the youth is about 60%. It's quite bad. That's a really atrocious situation, considering the fact of living costs and so on in Greece, which, you know, are not insignificant. And the fact that this is basically turning into a third world country inside the European Union, which is supposed to be a development institution that helps, you know, lift the welfare of its citizens, which is not doing at all in Greece. And the referendum today was basically the result of months and months and months of negotiations between the Greek government of Tsipras and Varoufakis with the European Central Bank, the European Union, and the IMF, which were going nowhere. So I remember when I was in London, I was listening to interviews and reading the news and so on. There were talks about how there was an extension. There was a four-month extension of the bailout, which was supposed to come to an end, I think, sometime in March, I think it was, February, March. And so whatever, July minus 4 months. So that extension, you know, went to June, and the Greeks, you know, they capitulated on a few fronts, but mainly they kept the promises to the electorate that they would negotiate, and that they would, you know, that they would cancel some of the debt, and that they would allow, you know, for some type of investment and some type of programs that would allow them to grow the economy again and get it back to some inkling of where it was, you know, before the crisis, which of course is necessary.
Okay. Well, here's the situation. Then, in reality, of course, if we're still like after this referendum, as I read, the IMF, who was she? The
Christine Lagarde.
President or the? Yeah, well, was she a chairman?
She is the whatever. I understand. I think she's
whatever
the
title
I think she's
she
the president,
the
but
God?
Whatever you call it.
Yeah, she's the top.
And you know, and by the way, you know she doesn't pay any taxes on her income. Well, actually, it's a really funny fact, and there was an article in The Guardian a few years ago showing how hypocritical this was. So,
okay, well, anyways, they admitted some sort of failure of this austerity measure plan
yes,
that they had. That surprisingly, that they officially somehow said it. Maybe because this referendum kind of resembled their negotiations, and it was a democratic decision, right?
Well, of course, yes. It can't get any more democratic.
So, exactly. So it was like in your face, you know, IMF. That's what the Greek people
said.
Well,
yeah, but then the funny thing is that a lot of The folks inside the IMF already were aware of this, and they were already warning that, you know, there would have to be some type of a cut in the debt. But the public.
Yeah, it's just that it's their work and they don't see any alternative for it. What is the
Well, the
alternative then?
alternative, of course. I mean, even remaining within the sort of the in the American sense of the word, the liberal dynamic, you know, not getting into the arguments of, you know, should we overthrow capitalism and all that sort of stuff, you know, which might maybe are relevant. But just remaining within the sort of the liberal spectrum, there is a great argument to be made for Keynesian, just traditional Keynesian intervention. You know, Keynes published the general theory of wages, labor, and prices in 1936, and at the height of the Depression, Great Depression, and he suggested in this book that it might become necessary in the case of a lack of what he called aggregate demand, which is the collective demand of all of the different agents in the society, in the economy, including the government, including businesses, including individuals, that the government steps in to make up for a deficit or I'm not going to say deficit because it doesn't mean, I don't mean it in that sense, I mean a lack of demand, so effective demand. The fact that in a time of recession there are these vicious cycles or these feedback effects where businesses lay off workers, workers have less money, so they spend less money, so more businesses lay off more people, and then that just sort of snowballs out of control, means that left to its own devices, economies often turn to crisis. They often turn to very bad situations that really hinder and harm and even kill people, you know, and not to speak of their welfare. And this is what you experienced at that time. I mean, when this book was coming out, you saw that the old classical traditions of liberal theories that, you know, if you left an economy to itself, it will find an equilibrium, are just bunk. They're just not true. I mean, they are true, but they're true in the sense that they might find an equilibrium that you do not want to experience. You know, an equilibrium of despair, of chaos, of desolation, of poverty, of horrors upon horrors. I mean, it's lovely to say that that's an equilibrium, but, you know, is that an equilibrium that we want? So first of all, we say that we have multiple equilibria. Admitting that suggests that, you know, that there are different paths, and depending on what we do, we have different outcomes. Of course, anyone with any common sense knows that that's true, but in the economics profession, that was, you know, like a new radical idea. So just goes to show how cloistered they are. In any case, those theories today are perfectly apt to what's going on in Greece. Greece has a lack of effective demand, a lack of aggregate demand. There's not enough, you know, there's not enough economic activity going on. People aren't buying enough because they don't have enough money, and because they're not buying enough, more businesses are going out of business, and that just leads to further people having less money, and banks, you know, not having enough money, and so on and so forth. So somehow a intermediary has to come in to stimulate the economy and to create more demand, and that typically is the government, and in this case, the government is limited to some extent on what it can do because, first of all, Greece is in a very poor position. It cannot really use the means of offering its own treasury or central bank bills because, well, they're not very desirable considering that the European countries have different bonds or, you know, papers as you call them, which they shouldn't really have considering they share a currency. You know, there aren't any bills that you can buy from Texas or Alabama or New York. They all, you know, they're just U.S. Treasury bills, U.S. Treasury bonds, and so on, T-bills as you call them. So, Yanis Varoufakis, in his modest proposal, calls for what you call Eurobonds, which means that you aggregate the treasury bonds of the European Central Bank at the European Central Bank and not at the national level as they are today, and of the different Eurozone countries. And that would make sense for many reasons, especially
What is the risk for
the
them?
risks. Well, the risk, there isn't really a risk.
Centralization of the power of
No, not
economy or
really.
something?
No, I mean, not any more than it already is. It would just be one step higher, which really wouldn't be noticeable for most people. The only risk, or the only—I wouldn't even say it's a risk. It's because it would happen. The only cost would be that for some northern European countries like Germany, like the Netherlands, like perhaps Finland, other countries like that, which, you know, have a very strong, vibrant economy at the moment. Others maybe don't, but for them, the rates of interest for borrowing for the governments would increase only marginally. You know, they wouldn't increase a lot. I mean, Germany and France and so on are just so much larger than the other countries that it wouldn't make a big difference. So what this means is that what I mean is that so a bill or a bond, these are basically debt instruments. It's the government going into debt. It's like you going to your bank and taking out a loan. Governments do that as well, and they sell what are called what are just debt instruments. They're called bonds or bills. And just in more general speech, they're called papers because I guess in olden times they were printed on paper and you have a little piece of paper that says government bonds and blah, blah, blah. And you can even find posters from World War II that, you know, buy US bonds, we'll buy war bonds, blah, blah, blah. In any case, what the interest rate is basically the rate of return for the investor. What that means is that, and it also measures the risk. It measures the risk of the return of the recovery of the debt. And so, what that effectively means is the more stable the economy, the stronger the economy, the lower the rate of interest will be because you have a less of a fear of risk investing in that economy. But also, that means that you have less of a return on your debt instrument. What has ultimately, and I mean, in principle, that sounds fine. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you would just get a division of personalities, and people who are more conservative would invest in Germany and the Netherlands. People who are more risky would invest in, you know, in Latvia a few years ago, or Ireland, or Portugal, or Italy, or even Greece. But what has effectively happened is that that's not happened at all, and nobody's investing in Ireland. Nobody's in, well, Ireland maybe is an exception, but nobody's investing in Italy. Nobody's investing in Portugal. Nobody's investing in Greece. So it's very hard for those countries to have sources for liquidity, money, in order to invest in their economies because of course, and then of course, then the rate of return is so high that means that they have to pay so much on the debt that in many cases it can spiral out of control, and that's basically what happened in Greece. So the euro bonds would basically make the rates of return equal, just like what happened with the euro. You know, you no longer have an exchange rate between the mark and the kroner, or you do now in Denmark. Never mind, yes, you do. But you know what I mean. You no longer have an exchange between the mark and the franc, the drachma or the lira or the and. So the same thing would happen with the debt instruments of the country's central banks. They would basically be the same. So it would not make a difference if you're buying German debt, if you're buying French debt, if you're buying Spanish debt, if you're buying Greek debt. You're just buying European debt. You're buying debt from the European Central Bank, which prints the money. This is how it happens in most currency unions. Like I said, you cannot buy Texas debt. You cannot buy New York debt. You buy United States debt, and that just gets distributed however the household of the United States decides to do that. And that has, again, like I said, it has the cost of increasing the rates of borrowing somewhat for countries like Germany. So, I mean, in real sense, I guess my welfare would be slightly reduced in the sense that my government can't borrow at negative rates of return. But I'm willing to live with that to ensure that, you know, the Greek people don't die like they're doing now. That's one aspect. And of course, the other one is just some debt relief. If a country has too much debt and it can't pay the debt because the economy is not growing, then you have to, you know, get rid of some of that debt because either it's not going to pay any of it or it's just going to pay some of it at a later date. So the choice for the investor is, do I take a cut on my debt? You know, do I accept 70% of what I offer this person or nothing? And at this point, that's basically what's going on in Greece. And like you said, the IMF has been pointing this out as well.
Yes. But in the end, the people are suffering
Yes, yeah, and it's.
from all of this. But you can't even blame anyone really about these, well, this crisis. The problem is, well, you have to solve it, but the least vulnerable people should be protected first.
Well, I mean, and that's the idea that, you know, that founded the European Union, people were saying things like solidarity and, you know, togetherness and so on. But when it really comes down to it, you just have interests of the capitalists versus interests of normal people versus interests of, you know, of different sectors of bureaucrats. Even bureaucrats have their own interests,
and there's still also some national interest involved.
Yes. So yeah, I guess the referendum was really a question about what is the future of the EU, of the Euro, of the European Union, and how much influence do normal people have, does the population have, on its own fate, on its own the dynamics in its own country, in its own, you know, its own living situation. And we don't have the answer to that yet. Now we have an answer to what the Greek people think. So now we know what they think. And they overwhelmingly think that the path that the discussions are going in are poor, that they support their government, that they think that what's going on now with Europe is very bad, very poor, and they don't want what they're being offered. They don't feel, and to me it's just such a great sign of how the lessons of life show, they shine through the illusory mechanics of propaganda and so on. So it doesn't matter what you say, and of course all of the media, the Greek media is really monopolized. It's one of the most monopolized in the Western world. So there are about five families that are variously involved in shipbuilding and other you know, and in tourism and other, and lottery and other, you know, industries that own virtually all the newspapers and television and radio stations in Greece. And they were all overwhelmingly in support of, you know, of accepting the terms of the bailout, because of course they're wealthy and they don't have to, you know, abide by cuts in pension and increases in taxes. They don't care if they're going to pay 17% in taxes, 13%, 7%. It doesn't matter to them. They, you know, they have money, they have wealth. And most of their money is not even in Greece, so they couldn't care less some of their income is dependent on these cross-national transfers, so of course they would care if Greece left the euro, and that's their main concern. So whatever they can do to decrease the risk of Greece leaving the euro, which of course the no vote does increase marginally, but it was not a vote about leaving the euro, it was a vote about what they believe to be the best policy. And but it just shows the callousness of these families, that they just continue to obliterate the newsways with false information, where they basically, I mean, there was literally false information floating around out there. People saying things like, oh, Greeks can now only take out 20 euros per day out of their ATMs. Of course, there are limits and there are capital controls, because the Greek banks are running out of money because of a policy basically of warfare that the central bank started. Where they just froze the emergency lending, which means that Greek banks are just running out of money. So they did impose controls, but it was nowhere near 20 euros. That's just a lie. And other things that were what were being said that were just not true. Trying to get people, Greek people, to be scared and saying, you know, oh, if we vote no, then we're going to be, you know, have chaos and we can't have that. So let's just accept everything, and it didn't work. So that just goes to show that Greek people are so despondent, they're so desperate, they're so impoverished at this point, they don't care. It can't get any worse.
No, exactly. Well, I guess it can get worse, but...
Well, I mean, objectively, of course, it can always get worse, but again, I'm just stating what I believe that the Greek people were thinking at this point.
Yes. Well, if we would say, if the next would be a decision about joining or leaving, I mean, leaving the Eurozone and re-establishing their own currency, That would, of course, cause a lot of damage to the European countries.
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't know if anyone knows. I guess if you knew what the... it would... well, first of all, I would say it would depend on the circumstances under which Greece would leave the euro. If it were to default unilaterally on its debt, then yes, there would be some damage to the European economy. Probably, well, I wouldn't even say that, I would not exclude that could be a catastrophic damage, or that it would have repercussions across the EU, across the world even. But I would think, and this is just my assumption, and it's not based on extensive study of the situation. I mean, I've not studied the monetary relations between flows between Greece and the EU enough to comment informally on this. But I would think that, well, I'll just make it a hypothetical statement. There's no reason to believe them because they just, in the past few days, have just spewed out lie after lie after lie. But a lot of the leaders of the European Union have said, people like Merkel and Draghi and others have said that the Union now is stronger than it was in 2011, and they could weather Brexit, the exit of Greece from the euro. Just assuming that that's true, not saying that it is true, but assuming that it is true, the question is, I don't think it's the right one. That shouldn't be whether it can weather it. There's even a moral component to it. How would this be perceived internationally? What would be the implications in the perceptions of people internationally and even within the euro? So if people in Spain see this, if people in Italy see this, if people anywhere in the eurozone see this, or anywhere in the EU see this, their fastidiousness, their reliance, their ability to rely on the euro as a currency, or the EU as an institution that is stabilizing, is going to be shattered. The trustworthiness of the euro is going to be shattered. Because, and there is no, there are no conditions today that exist that are written to state, you know, what are the conditions of exit from the euro. They just don't exist. No country has ever left it. No, there are no written rules. You know, this is the procedures. So if Greece is just unilaterally expelled from the euro, if it leaves unilaterally, then that would, I think, shatter the perceptions by people on various levels, inside and outside the euro, inside and outside the EU, of those institutions. And that, I think, would have much more lasting damage than whatever the Draghi and Merkel and others are talking about. That, because they're just thinking short term, you know, what would happen tomorrow in Germany? What would happen tomorrow in, you know, any other country in the EU if Greece left the euro? And, you know, let's just say that nothing would happen. I think that there would be much more serious long-term effects that would derive from this than just those immediate effects. And those are the ones that relate to the fact that this is would resemble a sort of a reality show where, you know, survival of the fittest, and, you know, who would be next? Maybe it's Portugal, maybe it's Italy, and you could have a TV show about it, you know, where people vote and they call in every day, and today it's Portugal, today it's Ireland, maybe, you know, who knows, Lithuania. So, it... Huh?
But is it possible for Greece to declare bankruptcy during...
Yes, I mean, of course, it's possible for any country to declare bankruptcy at any time.
Which means they would have to reject all the debt.
Yes, yes.
And then the European banks...
Of course they would, that. Yes.
And then at least they will get rid of their fucking debt.
Well, Greece would, yes, but it, of course, nothing comes without a cost. Well, something comes without a cost, but
oh, then definitely, if the European banks want them to pay the loan someday, then this is not like a slavery thing that the Greece has to do. Then they'll have to play according to their rules.
Whose rules?
So the Greek rules, so that it fits them, you know. so they don't have to enslave themselves in order to pay back this loan.
Yes, exactly. And that's, I think, something that is just now becoming apparent. So the strategy before, and I think you will see a switch in strategy, and you even saw that in the course of the day. So what was the strategy before was a scare tactic. So they tried to take it on a psychological level and say, well, if we scare the Greek people into thinking that if they oppose us, they will be forced to leave, they will be forced to, you know, they will, things will get worse, and so on, and so on, and so on, they will cave in to our demands, they will obey our, you know, dictates. And you saw over the course of today, as the polls were coming in, saying that there was more support. So this is a funny thing. So Martin, you know Martin Schulz, right? The president of the European Parliament. He apparently had suggested in public today, this morning, so Sunday morning, the Greek people are voting on their membership in the EU. No means there will be no future for Greece in the European Union, I think he actually even said. Maybe the latter part he said Europe, but he did say no to the EU. And just a few hours later, he sort of backpedaled, which is really strange, you might think. And he said, well, actually, no, we can always work out a compromise or something basically to that effect, just paraphrasing it. And I mean, that just shows that even in the course of one day, the strategy of these high level diplomats, these high level political figures, can change. And I think you will see that generally in the next few days. And even, I mean, like someone like Merkel, she is just known for not ever saying anything. I mean, you don't ever hear anything about her and what she's saying. She basically said in the last few days we wouldn't continue talking until the referendum. And now, basically, she said that just to be safe, not to say the wrong thing. She probably sided, of course, with these other people like Schäuble and Schulz, but now she will probably say things like, well, if it is the case that the Greek people want this and that, it is important that we also have solidarity and we can always assess the situation. And now that the IMF has prepared the way by saying they need debt relief, she can safely and comfortably convince her votership, her party, to say, well, actually, maybe we do need it. But it's just really pathetic that it had to come to this level. It had to come to this stage. And if you read it, some of the news articles that were floating around in the last few days, they were so incendiary, so hateful, so aggressive towards the Greek government, people calling them idiots, incompetent, fools, that they're just playing games, and so on. And that to me is just, I mean, it was racist in a way too. You know, this is how Greeks are. They just are opportunists. And things like that were just, you know, that was appearing in places like The Economist. You know, these are respectable journals and they were saying things like that. So, I mean, it's really horrible that they even allowed the debate and the argument to go this far. They did, and it did go this far, and the Greek people were not bought, or they were not sold by this rhetoric, and so now they have to go to Plan B, whatever the European Union and the ECB and IMF have in store now. We'll just have to see, but I think that it will definitely be a change in tactics, whatever the new tactic will be. I think it will be less hard line, and it'll be more conciliatory and more sort of shuffling the feet and, you know, coughing and, you know, oh, well, you know, maybe it's, we can work something out and, you know, this type of thing.
Ach so. Well, this is now it's interesting how the people will approach the Syriza party or the government itself, because they already had to give up, as I heard, several of their promises that they made before.
Yes, for instance, the renationalizations. They were going to renationalize some of the ports and some of the various infrastructure. I think the port of Piraeus may even come up.
And you need money.
Well,
for that.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, and they basically was more political, more of a political thing, and the the institutions that they, as they call them, the troika, as they used to be called, they basically said, no, no, that's not going to happen. So they did cave on that. They did say, we're going to allow the privatizations that have already been decided by the previous government to continue, but we will not continue privatizations. And that's the line that they stuck to. I mean, in a way, it's still very principled, and they were in a between a rock and a hard place, so they didn't really have much of a choice. As you can see, I mean, the campaign tactics were just really incredibly brutal and really hostile from the beginning. I mean, if you saw some of the language, not of the newspapers and of the commentary, they can say whatever they want. I mean, it's still quite offensive, but you know, they have the right to their opinion. But diplomats, politicians, people who are elected to represent the national interests of different countries were saying things like, if you heard Schäuble, Wolfgang Schäuble, the German finance minister, I mean, I cannot stand the guy. He comes from the region that I'm in right now. I'm not where I live. I'm actually in the place where I grew up, which is in Stuttgart in the south of Germany. And oh my God, the attitude of some of the people here is just so, it's so conservative. And the further out you get from the city, I mean, I grew up in the city and it's fine here. There's a lot of foreigners and you hear a lot of languages of French and Spanish and blah, 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 Italian. But, you know, he's from small towns in Black Forest. And the people that you see there are just so, so racist, so ultra-conservative. They're so old-fashioned that, I mean, it's just disgusting to see someone like that in a position of power like that. Because some of the things he's been saying have been, he literally said, it is unfortunate that the Greeks elected the wrong government. You know, and just saying various things like that and calling the government illegitimate and all these types of things and not helpful. And I mean, he's not helpful. He's playing hardball. He's the one who's playing games in the situation, saying basically. And I mean, it's very disrespectful. But I mean, that's, I almost say that with humor, because the people here are not known for being respectful. They're just very rude. So, Schäuble. You know, anytime you see someone with a name like, with an L-E at the end, just like the company Nestle, you know, Nestle? They're also from the region here. And they have sort of Swiss roots, but it's the same sort of culture. See? You can just tell from their worldview that they're this type of, you know, this type of really stingy, conservative. They like to save. They like to, you know, save money. Basically, you know, it's this type of that type of person. He's just like that.
Okay. Well, then the future role of Syriza, being as a leftist party, they at some point have to start to implement their ideological principles or whatever they are that they promised. Otherwise they'll be stuck in this position that they are cleaning up.
Yes, and now, yes.
For many years.
Well, exactly, you're absolutely right. And exactly right now is when they are at their strongest. Right now, at this moment, when they, I mean, they're counting the final votes as we speak. They should be finishing counting up in the next few minutes. They just received a renewed mandate. You know, they came into the election, they won the election with about 36-37% of the vote in the beginning of the year. And they were just approved by more than 60% of the population. So, I mean, obviously, a majority of the Greek people supports what's going on with Syriza. And that was what was attempted to be stopped. So there was an obvious attempt. And Gregor Gysi, who is the head of the German Left Party, he just gave a speech on Friday, basically stating, you know, addressing the Chancellor Merkel, saying, you know, what you're doing is, I don't remember the exact quote. It was, look this up.
Mm-hmm.
He said. He said, "You're right about one thing," to Merkel. "The issue is not about the money." Well, Merkel did say that, and then he said, "You simply want to overthrow a leftist government." So basically, this is what was going on, in many ways, indirectly, of course, through comments like Schäuble's. Schäuble said it right clear. They elected the wrong government. It's unfortunate. And the language and the actions of the various institutions of the European Union, especially the ECB's decision to freeze the emergency liquidity to Greece, basically cutting off their banking system from any liquidity, to install the sense of panic and fear, was an attempt to delegitimize Syriza in saying that, and even the IMF was complicit in this. They were basically berating Syriza, saying that they have handled the household poorly, handled the budget poorly, and these sort of things. I mean, it's a government that is on a bootstrap. It's on a bootstrap budget. They are getting sidestepped left and right. They have no access to the funds that the last government did, and then they're being told that they're handling the budget poorly. I mean, that's not a fair accusation. So, up until this point, the government was in a weak position. It was in a vulnerable position. But they, I guess, I mean, I'm surprised in some sense. But I suppose that they have been very successful at motivating and mobilizing the population, so that they have actually do have the population behind them. And now I think that they are in a strong position. They will move forward starting tomorrow. They will be in an offensive position rather than a defensive position as they have been. So I think you will see a lot more coming from Syriza in the coming days and weeks.